This is a subject that I'm really excited about. And the reason that I'm excited about it is twofold. Is one, there's going to be a new learning curve here about Jacob that I don't think most people have considered before. I know that I had not considered it before. And when I've shared it with others, they tell me that they haven't heard it before either. So I'm excited about that. Sometimes when you peel back the layer of the onion, you find more and more and more as you dive in. The second thing is, while this is going to be an interesting talk that kind of tickles our intellectual fancy, this is a real story about patience and perseverance. It really is. And so as we're discussing Jacob, what I would like everyone here to do is I'd like you to put yourself in the shoes of Jacob and ask yourself, how would I feel about that? Are we ready? Okay. So when we talk about Jacob, if I were to ask you, what is Jacob remembered for? What would be your answer? 12 tribes of Israel. That's a good one. What else? Betraying his father. That's the most common answer. Raise your hand if that's what you're thinking. You think of Jacob and you think, well, he put the hair on his arms and he told him he was Esau. That is true, although it might not be the best way to remember him. It might not be exactly fair, and we're going to talk about that. Forgiving his brothers? Jacob. Oh, Jacob, yeah. No, that's okay. Well, that's another one. Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that too. But lying to his father about being Esau, that seems to be the first thing that pops into our mind. In fact, when I've had conversations with others, in fact, when I thought about it myself for many years, and I think it's the reason I dove into this topic to look at it, was I just wasn't comfortable with the idea that here we have a deceiver, a liar, who is the father of the chosen nation of God. And that just struck me as odd. And I thought there has to be more to it. And you know what? There is. And so after I've had these thoughts and this study, these are the things that I remember Jacob for. Being faithful, being obedient, for disregarding his own concerns, for humility. And I think my favorite part of it is for his understanding of the kingdom and wanting to be a part of it. Now, if you have no idea how it's true that Jacob knew about the kingdom, then I think you're really going to love this. These are all character lessons for us that we're going to go through. And we're going to find that Jacob's story, even though he has some faults, he's got a really impressive story. And if I were to compare him to myself, I would say, you know, I've got the fault part. I don't know that I've got the impressive part. So some of the things we're going to touch on are the birthright and the blessing. There's two. The birthright and the blessing. Jacob had no interest in material possessions. He was interested in being a part of the promised kingdom. We're going to talk about the proposal of marriage and the surprise marriage, as well as the changing of wages, where he showed an extreme level of acceptance of his circumstances. We're going to talk about wrestling with the angel that our brother just brought up a second ago. Jacob wanted only one thing, and he was determined to get it, and it manifests itself in that account. And when he says to Esau at the end, my Lord, it shows his humility. Okay? So let's start with the birthright. We all know about the birthright. Jacob is cooking stew and Esau comes in. He's super tired. He's exhausted. He says, you know, let me have some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Jacob says, sell me your birthright. And Esau says, that's fine. I'm about to die. What good is a birthright anyway if I'm just going to pass away? And Jacob says, almost like with a serious hint, no, swear to me. Tell me you're going to give me your birthright. And Esau says yes. And one thing that you notice with Esau is that therefore his name was called Edom. And that's interesting to us, especially when you look at it. It's either Isaiah 61 or Isaiah 63. When you see our Lord saying the one that comes from Bozrah, that's the capital of Edom. We know it's talking about the Esau people there. But the way he got the name Edom hints to me that it was a new nickname. I want some of that red stew. And so they started calling him Edom. Hey, Red. It gives me the impression that when people heard that he did this, they said, what are you doing over some stew? We're going to nickname you after that stew. And so Esau despising his birthright was a known thing. We're not told too much about what Jacob did. Now, it says when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, and that we know. What it says, Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. What does that mean? What does it mean to say he was dwelling in tents? Was that a profession? I think it's a small signal from the Lord that there was a blessing on him, because that word is used 11 times as tabernacles in the Old Testament. It's not the main word. There's another one used 20 times, but it is used 11 times. And I thought that was interesting. But there's going to be a segment where we retouch on this at the end of the discourse, where you find this to be super exciting. At least I found it super exciting. I just hope I'm not the only one. But Rachel knew that Jacob loved the Lord, or Rebecca, that's a typo. Rebecca knew that he loved the Lord and that Esau was a man of the world. And we see that because when the deceit happens, which is, by the way, somewhere between 30 and 50 years later, and it could have been longer, okay? Rebecca gives the instruction to Jacob, okay? And Rebecca says, I want you to pretend to be Esau and go get this blessing. And he says, perhaps my father will feel me, will feel my arms. And there's such a distinguished hairy arm on Esau that isn't on Jacob. He says, I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself. And Rebecca says, let that curse be upon me. So whose fault is it? Whose responsibility is it? Because she says, obey my voice. Now the minute, you know, again, we know that obeying your parents is important, but the minute that you have one parent say, you need to obey me and deceive your father, you're now put in an awkward position because you're going to disobey somebody, right? So is it fair that he takes all of the responsibility? I don't think so. Is it fair that he takes some of the responsibility? Yes, he does. And the reason that I think that is, look, he doesn't say in verse 12, I don't want to deceive my father. He essentially says, I don't want to get caught. Okay? Now he says, I don't want my father to think I'm mocking him. So again, we're trying to determine what his personality is like. You can make an argument for each side that maybe he was a greedy deceiver, or that he was just a humble, obedient child who's trying to do what his parents want him to do, and they've put him in a spot where he can't serve both parents. So by the time we get to Esau, this is where we know that there are two things. Esau comes to Isaac, and Isaac tells him that Jacob has come first, and he received the blessing. And Esau says, wait a second. So you're telling me that he's doing it twice? He's taken my birthright and my blessing? And so there we see there's a distinguishment between the two. And in a couple of scriptures later, this is where it says that Esau was planning to kill his brother Jacob because he was so upset about this. And then when we come to Rebekah sending Jacob off, she says, look, he might come kill you. You've got to go away, right? So that he doesn't come after you. And what I want you to notice is that there's no chastisement here of Jacob. I also want you to notice he's not taking anything with him. He gets this birthright and he gets this blessing. And what are they? He doesn't take anything with him. In fact, even when Isaac talks to him after that, he does not chide him for deceiving him. Okay? And so it says, Jacob, he called Jacob and he blessed him. And this is after the blessing he already gave. It says, Isaac did not rebuke Jacob for the deceit. Why? I think they knew. Have you guys ever observed a situation? Let's just take a large company. And dad started it. And he's got sons. And the company's going to be handed down to his sons. And he's got one son that's born first. But he's the guy that likes to go out and have fun. He likes to take the money that his dad earned and spend it. You got child number two, who is more studious, more obedient, more disciplined. Which one do you want running your company? And I think that that's the impression everybody knew. I think by the end of this discourse, when we bring out a couple of the last points, you're going to see that Jacob was the guy they all knew deserved this blessing, was going to be the best fit to receive this blessing that went to Abraham. And Esau was not. No fault to Esau, not saying he was a bad guy. But I don't think that he was interested in the kingdom of God. I think he was interested in the now. And we're going to find that the stuff that he wanted, he got. Okay? So, in Hebrews 11:20, it says, by faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. And so, what's interesting is that there's no fault given to Jacob during this experience. He also notices something with Esau. Esau gets married. Does anybody know how old Esau is when he's married? How old? 40. Nice job. 40. How old is Jacob when he gets married? All right. 77. Okay. And look at the example here. They say to him, you must not take a Canaanite woman. Go to Padan Aram and go to your mother's brother, Laban, and take from him one of his daughters. There is a scripture that says that when Esau was 40, he marries these two women. They were both Hittites. And this made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. And we're not told how, but we do see a distinguishment between the two sons, don't we? One gets married to two women, and it makes life bitter for him. Jacob waits until he is 77 years old. Now, how many people here are under 77 years old? You all got married too soon. Says it in the Bible. So think about, put yourself in these shoes. This is where I want you to start mentally putting yourself in the shoes of Jacob, of how old he was, of how long he waited to do some of these things, and how he never complained about it. So here at 77 years old, Jacob goes to serve Laban. He's single. He takes nothing with him. He gets the birthright and he gets the blessing, but he leaves his father's house with no possessions. And so what would you say? Put yourself in Jacob's shoes. If your mother asked you to deceive your father, what would you do? If she told you to be obedient to her words, but again, in deceiving your father. If it enraged your brother and he wanted to kill you, and then they asked you to leave to protect yourself at 77. Okay? And so when we look at Jacob, and we see that he deceived his dad, it's very easy to think he was greedy, he wanted this birthright, he snuck himself in there. But was he greedy? Because this birthright, we know in the book of Deuteronomy, it tells us the birthright to the firstborn is the double portion. That's the point of the birthright. And he does not leave with that, does he? No. He leaves with nothing, right? So is that why Jacob wanted the blessing? There's a small problem with that, because he left with nothing, because he did not ask for possessions. He did not complain about leaving with nothing. He did not say, if you want me to marry this girl, please give me a dowry to give to her father. There's nothing. And he never mentions it. And so if you show up on the doorstep of somebody's house at 77 years old saying, I just moved out of my dad's basement, I've got no job, and I want to marry one of your daughters. Right? Look, if he left because he was greedy, if he did those things because he was greedy, he did it wrong. Because he got nothing out of it. Okay? So I don't think he did it out of a want of possessions. I don't think he did it out of greed or ambition. I think he did it because he wanted to be a part of the kingdom of God. And we're going to discuss that more later on when it talks about wrestling with the angel. Here we come to the story of Jacob's ladder. Again, keep in mind, this is right after the whole deceit scenario. He's leaving the house and he goes from Beersheba and he has this dream about these angels ascending and descending. And he says essentially that this is holy land. And so he names it Bethel. And so that's where they get the name Bethel, because that's where Jacob had the Jacob's ladder experience. This was a blessed vision that Jacob was given, I believe, as a reward from God. Whenever God communicates with you directly in a way that you know, hands down, that's him communicating with you. That's a blessing. And so notice he's not punished for the deceit to Isaac. So we know there's just more to the story. Okay? And so then we get to serving Laban. And again, I just want you to think about what he goes through. He's 77. He meets Rachel. He essentially falls in love. And he says, I will serve you 7 years. And Laban says, that sounds good. And then in the evening of their marriage, he sneaks the other sister into the bedroom. And he wakes up with a different woman than the one he's planned to marry. And then Laban's response, Laban is not a good guy. Laban's response is, oh, sorry, probably should have told you, I can't have you marry my younger daughter when my older daughter is still single. So just, you know, marry the older one first, wait 1 week, then you can marry the second one, and you can just serve me for another 7 years. How would you feel to wake up with a woman that you didn't expect to wake up to? He waited a long time to get married, okay? And he never complained. So Jacob said unto Laban at one point, he says, send me away that I may go to my own place and go to my own country. But Laban says, you know, I've learned from divination from God that the reason that I've become wealthy is because you are blessed. And I want you to stay and keep working for me so that I stay blessed. How does that sound? And Jacob essentially says, okay, I will serve you for another length of time and take care of the sheep. Okay? And in one of the complaints that Jacob makes to Laban later on is that you changed my wages 10 times. So you leave with nothing, you show up at 77 years old, you marry one person, you don't realize that you married two people, you serve for 14 years, by the time you leave, you've served another 6 years for the animal, and it's about the 20-year point that you leave. Here's what the story about the sheep means. And I've been piecing this together with Morgan on the way over here, and it's really interesting to like read through this and try to figure out what the scriptures are saying, and I think we've got it. Jacob names his wages to Laban. Laban says, name your wages. Tell me what you want to get paid. And Jacob says, I will take all of the sheep that are speckled and spotted. You can have all the sheep that are straight colors. And so Laban gets the solid colors, and Jacob gets the speckled and spotted. And what the scriptures are telling us is that first, Laban went in there and took all of the goats and the sheep that would have belonged to Jacob. And he puts them in charge of his own sons. So Jacob says, I'll take these as my wages. He says, well, essentially, we'll see how you do. But the ones that you said you want, he takes them and gives them to his kids. And then puts Jacob 3 days' ride that way. This is not an honest person. Okay? And so this is what it looks like. He has these sheep. They're mostly solid color. And so what Jacob starts to do is he starts to separate those that are colored and those that are spotted or speckled. And it says that he takes these trees of poplar trees, almond trees, and plane trees, and he peels the bark off of the trees. And what that does is that exposes the inner tree, which has a lot of nutrients in it. And so it says it exposes the white of the stick. And so he sets the sticks that he peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And so essentially what we see happen is that the nutrients from these trees affect the water that they drink, and it increases their ability to breed healthy flocks. It's genius. This is somebody who knows what he's doing. So it says the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so they brought forth the striped, speckled, and spotted. And as it went on, and his breeding was more and more successful, we see a change in the flock itself, right? So some of the nutrients that these things have, one of them is this agouti gene. I've never heard of this before. I have no idea what it is. I just know how it's spelled. The other thing I know is that essentially this gene determines whether or not the lamb or the sheep or the goat has speckled, spotted, or just a straight color of fur. And so it's turned off or on by the mother's diet. So we know that when he uses these sticks and exposes them to these nutrients and making them healthier, he can predict what animals are going to be bred. Okay? And so as it goes on, what happens is Jacob separates the lambs and sets the faces of the flocks toward the striped and all the black towards Laban. And he essentially separates the two. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock that they might breed among the sticks. The feebler of the flock, he would not lay them down there, so the feebler would be Laban's. And so his flock grew strong and mighty. He said, oh, these are good, healthy sheep. Let's continue to breed with those. Another quote I found online from somebody who says they know what they're talking about. And again, it makes sense to me. He says, after these changes took place in the wool coat of the new generation of sheep and goats, Jacob began a secondary method of selective breeding, where he specifically bred the new, variegated, and more vigorous animals with each other, gradually eliminating the former sheep of Laban's flock. And so after he leaves Laban, that's when we come to the wrestling of the angel. Okay? Now it says, and this is all it's telling us, is that Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. How old was Jacob when this happened? Somebody be a brave soul. How much? 97. He's 97 years old when he leaves Laban. He serves him for 20 years. Okay? Now, does he leave Laban on really good terms, or does he have to sneak out? He has to sneak out because Laban and his sons are saying, look at how strong his sheep are getting. He must be stealing from us. And after 20 years, again, no complaining on the part of Jacob. None. He stays there until God says, I now want you to go. And so he goes. But he had no plans to leave of his own accord. He would like to, but he was actually obedient to what Laban wanted him to do, which I just find really impressive. I personally would not have asked permission and would have left. Working for somebody like that? Absolutely. So, here's the wrestling of the angel. He's 97 years old. And who's the physical of the two brothers? Which one's more likely to be physical? It's Esau, right? He's the hunter. He's the big strong guy. Jacob is kind of the quiet guy. Okay? And so, Jacob held on to this angel with everything he had. He wrestled with him all night. He says, I'm not letting go until I get what? Until I get your blessing. Is there anything in that we've read so far that makes you think that Jacob was greedy for things, for stuff, or for worldly riches? Because I don't see it. He's 97 years old, and this is the first time he's kind of going out on his own. He didn't want the stuff. He wanted the blessing of the kingdom. That's why he wrestles with this angel. Jacob proved that he wanted this blessing from God more than anything. Oh, we lost the screen. No problem. There's one part. Do they still have it online? Are we still connected to Zoom? Okay. Brother Russell tells us in reprint 5481, and I'm just going to read this because I really like it. The Lord frequently called attention to the fact that we should be persevering in prayer. He's comparing our prayer to Jacob's wrestling with the angel. Perseverance is an essential quality in the sight of God. Perhaps one reason our Lord does not answer our petitions quickly is that He desires us to learn to watch for the answer and thereby get the lesson of appreciation and gratitude to Him, as we realize that He has given our request. We should therefore pray with all perseverance, watching for the answer until it come, not merely for a few minutes, or for a day, or for a week. The Lord might see best to further defer the answer to our petition, either to test our faith, or increase our earnestness and get us into a better condition to receive the blessing. The prayer of Jacob at that time, as he was anticipating this meeting with Esau, is considered to be one of the most excellent examples of earnest, persevering prayer to be found in the Lord's Word. It's full of confidence and trust in God. It recounts God's promise to his father Abraham and his father Isaac and the renewal of this promise to himself. It was at this time, and doubtless in answer to this prayer, that the angel of the Lord appears to Jacob. And so full of faith was he in the power of God and his promise to protect him and make of him a great nation that he laid physical hold upon the angel, declaring, I will not let thee go unless thee bless me. The angel here appeared as a man, but Jacob had recognized him as the representative of the Lord sent to meet him. We cannot suppose that the angel wasn't sufficiently powerful enough to shake Jacob off. Right? I think that's a very reasonable thought. The angel could have shaken Jacob off very easily at any given point, and he didn't. Why? Well, it says, God was pleased to bless him, and that these circumstances were designed for the very purpose of drawing out Jacob's longing desire for this blessing. And so that's the reason for wrestling with the angel. God wanted Jacob to want it, and Jacob was faithful. He wanted it. He was willing to give up all of the stuff. We read, even before this, that he hears he's going to meet with Esau tomorrow. And what does he take? He takes 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milking camels, their calves, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. I guarantee there's a picture in there for us with the numbers, but for the sake of this, I did not go into it at all, because the lesson is that if Jacob were greedy, I don't think he would easily offer up at least half of everything he owned to give to his brother. When Esau gets there, and I find this really uplifting also, Esau has 400 men with him. 400 men. How's Esau doing? Esau seems to be doing just fine. Esau's really unhappy 20 years ago because he thought he wasn't going to be blessed. Is Esau blessed? It looks like it, doesn't it? 400 men. And what does Jacob say? Jacob bowed himself to the ground 7 times as his brother was approaching. Total humility. Esau says, "What do you mean by all this company that I've met?" And Jacob says, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord," to his twin brother. So this is a man of great humility. Again, with Esau's wealth, if you note, Genesis 36 is an entire chapter devoted to Esau and all his descendants. I think that Esau got the blessing he was actually hoping for. Sometimes we've heard people say the kingdom is going to be so great, and they don't realize they're going to be on earth, but they describe what they think heaven's going to be like, and it's right here on earth. And we say they're going to get exactly what they're hoping for. And I think that's the same case with Esau. But I think that Jacob understood the kingdom, and this is why. Number one is there's no other reasonable explanation for his gratitude during these trials. In Genesis 32:10, he says the most interesting thing. He says, "Lord, I am not worthy of the least of all of thy mercies." And here's a kicker. "Of all the truth which you showed unto thy servant." The truth. What truth? What did he know? Well, we know that Jacob appreciated the long-term promises and not instant gratification. Again, he's 97, almost 98. He's just about to start off on his own. And he's not saying, "Lord, why are you making me wait so long?" He says, "I'm not worthy of what you've already given me." Jacob's grateful for promises in the future. He's obviously got patience to receive this blessing that's going to have a payoff later. He's also told that his seed will bless all the families of the earth. He does not let go of the angel until he receives the blessing that he waited for. Now, here's something that I hope you'll find really interesting too. The truth was preached in his family. He says, "I'm not worthy of all the truth that you've shown me." So here we're going to get into the truth. Genesis 25:27, "When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, and Jacob dwelled in tents." Do you know who else dwelled in tents? Abraham. Now, Abraham died when Jacob was 15 years old. But it says, by faith, he went to live in the land of promise, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob. So, Jacob and Abraham had a relationship of grandfather-grandson. Okay? And later on in Hebrews, we go to verse 17. By faith, Abraham was tested. He was willing to offer up Isaac. He considered that God was able to raise him from the dead. So Jacob understood the resurrection. Because you better believe they talked about it. When you wonder, what do you think they talked about? Well, he probably knew Abraham left his land. And so when they told him to go to his uncles in Haran, which is a long way away, he said, okay, this is just what Abraham had to do. No problem. Abraham told him he was willing to sacrifice Isaac. Isaac is there in that conversation, and he says, yes. When the Lord asks you to do something, you do it, and you have faith that it'll work out. What a witness it might be for a 15-year-old boy to hear from his dad that when he was 15, that he was laid on a group of sticks on an altar, willing to allow himself to be sacrificed. That's surreal. So I think Jacob knew the resurrection. He knew the truth. He knew these blessings. I think that's the truth that he knew. And I think that's what he wanted. I think that's why he goes after the blessing and the birthright. He doesn't care which one it is he gets. He's not looking for the stuff. He wants to make sure that he's a part of that. Esau's nowhere in this conversation. He's not there with him. He's not dwelling in tents. He's out shooting stuff, doing what normal boys do. Jacob wanted to know the truth. The other thing that we know, besides the fact that Jacob listened and Esau didn't, is if you look at Acts 3:21, it says that God has spoken about times of restitution from the very beginning, from the beginning of the world. All his holy prophets since the beginning of the world. Who is the most prominent prophet before the flood? Enoch. Now, look at the distance between Enoch and Noah. That is his great-grandson. Okay? And when you go down this whole line, this whole lineage, what we find is that between Noah and Abraham is 350 years. And Abraham lives until he's 50 when Noah dies. So the story of Enoch and the prophecies that he told went to Noah. Absolutely. He was well known. There's no doubt about it. Abraham lived while Noah was alive. Noah had, again, the experience of the flood. He knew the promises of God. Here's another man that said, God told me to do this and that in 120 years, like, go build a boat in 120 years, you're going to need it. And he does it. Right? And this is what Jacob grows up with. Jacob had access to Abraham. Abraham had access to Noah. And so when you wonder, how does Abraham come on the scene as somebody that God's working with? He's a part of that lineage. Jacob knew the truth from Abraham and Isaac. And so what I'm going to remember Jacob for is being faithful. He trusted in the promises of God. He was very patient. He was very patient. He was obedient to his mom. He was obedient, and his mom deserved it. Laban didn't, and he was still obedient. He was obedient to God. He disregarded his own concerns. 77 years old, he goes off to start all over with no possessions. In today's world, that's unheard of. We could not even imagine that. Then he works for Laban an extra 13 years because Laban tricks him into a second wife and for covering his sheep. He changes his wages 10 times. No complaints. And then he refers to Esau as Lord. I think that's just a really humble way to approach that scenario. And of course, we know that Esau was willing to forgive him too. It was a very loving moment. So those are the things that I think of now when I think of Jacob. And I hope the lesson has been interesting to you. I hope that we can all put ourselves in Jacob's shoes and just wonder, for the things that I get impatient with, is it right that I get impatient when you think about how long he waited for what he wanted? I think it's a good, worthy comparison. Anyway, may the Lord add a blessing. And as always, we hope that if we made a mistake, that he'll correct it.